Hall & Wilcox acknowledges the traditional custodians of the lands on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to all First Nations people joining us today.
Welcome back to part two of our discussion with Nicole Tumiati and Jackie Barrett on how professional service firms can restructure equity and manage debt. I'm Scott Butler, partner in our restructuring and turnaround practice. Enjoy the episode. So Jackie, turning to you again, noting what you said earlier, what if you just can't come to a negotiated position and there's just a complete breakdown between the parties?
For the purpose of this answer, I will reflect back on my first example, and in that case there was a complete breakdown of communication. Efforts had been made to try and buy each other out. But really discussions had halted. But this was at a point where they hadn't necessarily pursued all avenues around seeking advice, and I think that was an important step that they did take. Even though I know sometimes people don't want to bring lawyers in, they think we might make things more complicated. Having a third set of eyes and an independent person come in with perspective can be helpful. And they bring in new ideas, and they bring in options that are not just going straight to wind up or to liquidate the business. And so I would definitely say, particularly that case, bringing those advisors in was very useful. Also, there was a shareholder agreement, albeit it was very standard. There was a dispute process, and there was also a process for obtaining valuation. And so once they reached the point where they really just weren't willing to speak to each other anymore, their lawyers were able to try and inject some different ideas and to provide rational options. I think Nicole made a really good point before around the emotional side of these issues, and what can happen where you've got smaller businesses is it can actually just become a matter of principle for some people. They are just really annoyed and offended and angry, and in a sense they let their emotions get the better of them. That can be a massive obstruction to achieving an outcome, because rationality goes out the window, to be really honest. And so being able to see the wood for the trees and look at options objectively can be really difficult. And so in the case I was thinking of, we did pursue the dispute process, which was not well drafted, but still there were some steps, and most importantly there were time frames. So I can't recommend enough, if you are looking at dispute resolution clauses, for me the most benefit from those clauses is to put a time frame around parties moving to each step of the resolution process, so you don't want it to drag on and on and on. It can make things even worse. But we had that, and we also had the valuation process, and by way of lawyers, we were ultimately able to agree an independent valuation process that the parties were willing to follow. That did become extremely complicated, but we got there in the end. And so there was that option available for that client, and we were ultimately able to achieve a sale price for one party to buy out the other. So that is where people have stopped talking, but there's still some other remedies that might be available. Where it's really gone pear-shaped, Scott, is where you might start to think about whether you're going to appoint an administrator. And where my clients have reached that point, often it really helps to bring in an administrator who can at least just start conversations and start talking. And again, that can help. It may allow you to find a resolution outside before you go to that process of winding up. I've also found in the past there's sometimes one party who's really unwilling to contemplate any sort of winding up. They may have particular business objectives or other issues that may be impacted by a wind up of that business, and so it doesn't sound very nice, but it can be good leverage to propose that we go to appoint an administrator as a means of getting one party to be more willing to compromise. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, I can understand the leverage point there. I mean, clearly what we want to do, I mean, that was a good outcome in a difficult situation, but
yes.
we're really looking, and Nicole, sort of turning to you on this point, I guess the key objective would be to put in place, structures to avoid hopefully getting to the point that the parties fall out that much, or if they do, it's a much easier and smoother process. So with that in mind, are there, sort of a list of, things that owners should keep in mind at the outset when they're negotiating a restructure involving the exit of an owner?
Certainly. And I think it really, what your focus might be as an owner might depend on where you are at. Are you the owner who's more likely to stay in and remain with the business if the relationship deteriorates? Or are you the owner who's looking to exit? Now, I'll go through both for both. I mean, they'll obviously be relevant to both, but you need to think about how you protect, as an owner, how you protect yourself if the relationship deteriorates to the point where one of you does need to leave. If you're the person staying, a key consideration would be, how do you finance an exit of another owner? If that, presumably they'd be expected to be paid the value of their interest that they're giving up in the business, so that the funding for that needs to come from somewhere. Making sure you have everything necessary to run the business, and there's a lot of practical considerations that come into these, things like bank account zero, client records, client contracts, supplier relationships. And we've already touched on, just how important things like client lists can be, but making sure that that's protected and you've got access to that. Having in place appropriate insurances, making sure IP generally is protected, making sure there's robust restraints. And this is something that, again, having the governance documents in place to set out what the expectations are around restraints and non-competes. If you're an owner who's remaining, you don't want an exiting owner to go set up a competing shop, as soon as they leave the business. That could have a real detrimental effect on your business. And then also considering the other stakeholders and their sort of their take on things, clients, how sticky are clients to the business as opposed to individual owners, employees, and the like. If you're a person leaving, if you're not getting paid out on day one, you might want to consider security for payment. It's not unusual, coming back to the importance of being able to fund an exit, for the purchase consideration to be paid in installments over a period of time. So if you're not receiving all your money day one, you'd want some sort of security in place. You'd also want to consider if you've got any personal liability, that even though you've left the business, there might still be liabilities that you could be liable for sometime in the future. One we're seeing a little bit more of recently is ATO debts and director penalty notices. And the other thing is, you might be personally liable. You might have signed personal guarantees for the lease or things like that. So as part of your exit, you want to have a think about all of those issues and making sure that they're all dealt with. Also, on the flip side, I mentioned restraints. If you're the person who's leaving and this is what you do for a living, it's how you make a living. You want to make sure that you're not restrained to an extent that you can't continue working if and when you need to. And also to your ability to rely on your existing networks. Things particularly, your personal relationships that you would consider, not just the business, but yours. And to make the point again, we've raised this in a number of contexts, but getting the valuation right, that's important for both parties, both the party remaining and the party exiting.
I'll just add to just that existing network point, particularly in professional services businesses. And so if you are the party who's going to remain in the business, it's certainly something to factor in that so much of professional service providers' work is sourced from personal relationships and those networks. It's so difficult, in a sense, to put place restrictions around that. And so it's certainly something to think about, even in terms of LinkedIn and those other sort of social media connections that they might have. So it's certainly something to contemplate as part of any exit process that you might be negotiating, just so that you've got total clarity on what they can and can't use.
Yeah, that's a really great list of practical things to keep in mind in terms of exiting somebody, being the exiting person or being the remaining person. So just before we wrap things up, do either of you have any final key messages you want to make?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this has probably been the theme of the whole podcast, but I think what these situations highlight for me is that the benefit of taking the time at the beginning. I say this to my clients all the time, the shareholder agreement or the partnership agreement or the joint venture agreement that you're looking at is really your prenuptial agreement for business. And so taking that time to plan ahead and put in place all the right mechanisms for how the business will be operated and how you'll make decisions. And most importantly, in what scenarios would you exit and how would you exit? What would be the valuation process? How would you deal with deadlocks in a dispute? Those sorts of things, and taking the time to document that, think it through, discuss it while you still like each other, would be probably my overriding advice, because we've all seen how it can go really badly wrong. And I would say, and I'm sure Nicole would agree, it's never the case that there's a wonderful set of constituent documents that govern the relationship that we can look to when things have really turned nasty. And so it does, you know, there's a lot of stories about, oh, but we were good friends and we trusted mm-hmm. each other and we thought it would be fine. Or in the case of a young and entrepreneurial person, I just wanted to do the deal. I didn't care what I had to do. I just wanted to do that deal. But I still say, take the time to read what you're signing and be aware of the issues and seek advice, whether that's legal or your accountant, whoever that is, seek advice so that you have some idea of what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, thanks, Jackie. That's great. Nicole, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, and again, just building on the theme, which is around having good governance documents in place, I'd just add, make sure they're appropriate for your business. You know, it may be that you do engage counsel to get it put in place, you know, very detailed shareholders agreements, but it's got to be bespoke to what will actually work practically in your business. So things such as what stage are the owners at in their career? The other thing is I'd recommend getting an independent party in to help. If you find that you and the other owners are at a loggerhead, you know, in terms of trying to work through these key issues, whether that independent party is a senior manager who doesn't have an ownership interest, or it could be your lawyers that you bring in to help with the discussions, it can be really helpful to try and diffuse some of the emotional aspects of trying to put in place these governance documents for owners.
Yeah, and I expect it could be quite a difficult discussion even at the early stage when you do like each other, let alone when you don't. So the independent person makes a lot of sense to me. Well, thank you very much, Jackie and Nicole, for all those insights. And thanks, everyone, for listening today. As always, please get in touch with us if you have any questions. You can find our details on our website, which is hallandwilcox.com.au, or connect with us on LinkedIn. And if you enjoyed today's episode, then rate, review, or follow our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.